expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Mark Sigmund, are you ready?
Sure am, Gary.
Mike Vito, are you ready?
Yes, sir, I'm ready.
Start us up. Let's go. Call in now to be heard live on the Clean and Sober Radio Show at 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. Hey, good afternoon, and welcome to Clean and Sober Radio out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on radio station WWDB, AM 860. And I'm giving the call letters because Mark Sigmund and I are also on three Southern Florida stations Saturday evenings at 8 o'clock, and they are WWNN 1470 AM, 95.3 FM, and 96.9 FM. Mark, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Gary. And I always love hearing about Florida. Everybody's down there chilling out in Florida. It's awesome. How you been?
I've been good.
I missed you.
We missed you too.
And I missed you, Brad.
The only person to miss you, Brad. Yeah.
Been a long couple weeks.
You know, we have a great show today. Chris Turian is our guest. Former Philadelphia Flyer, former broadcaster, former a lot of stuff, and he has a great recovery story. So we're going to get to him in a minute. A couple things I'd just like to bring up. I want to send a shout out and a thank you to Cindy Bigtalia for connecting Clean and Sober Radio with Chris Turian. Cindy, thank you very, very much for being not aggressive, being assertive with me in making that connection. That's great. I also want to thank Judge Maddox for being on the show last week. He won the election, and we're really glad because he is a friend of the recovery community. There was a major methamphetamine bust in Ballard-Kinwood, which we broadcast out of here, 5 minutes from the station. And District Attorney Kevin Steele, Montgomery County, District Attorney Jack Stolzheimer, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, Mike McGrath, the Chief of Police, Lower Merion Township, and the State Police. It was a unified effort to get this guy. I'm not going to mention his name, but he had 10 pounds of methamphetamine in Ballard-Kinwood, and they got him. And the judge, actually a friend of mine, Karen Zucker, gave him $250,000 cash bail. He didn't get it, so he's sitting in Montgomery County Prison. 10 pounds of meth can do a lot of damage, especially if it's laced with fentanyl.
Yeah, it sure can. And, you know, we've been talking about it for a while here, about how methamphetamines has been coming from the West Coast to the East Coast. Yeah. And it's here. You know, as a clinician, I'm seeing it all the time where people are struggling with methamphetamine use disorders. And it's a tough one because there can be long-term damage to the brain from that particular drug.
Yeah, I remember the smell of that. That and crank. You never did that.
No.
The smell was like, it was ammonia. It was like, it was like a baby's diaper.
Yeah, it'll get you in a mental hospital. I'll tell you that.
Oh,
staying
it'll
up for days.
Right.
It really will.
Yeah, real quick. Let's do a roll call and we're going to get to Chris. There's a lot of people on here. Kathy Collin, Bob Moeller, Debbie Reynolds, Judith Lerner, Rob Dan. Yo, Rob. Debbie Reynolds. Kathy Wolf Collin again. Who we have here? Cindy Bigtaglia is watching. Cindy, thanks again. I don't know if you heard me at the beginning of the show. Todd Klotz, glad to be back from my trip and able to tune in. Bob Mueller. Blah, blah, blah. All right, let's. Monica McNally.
You got it. I know you do.
I know I got it. Do you have it?
Pokorny.
No,
it's Pokorny.
All right, whatever it is.
Here we go. We don't have time for this today because we have such a great guest.
Listen, we got a great guest on. Chris Terrian, thank you so much for giving us time and being on the show.
It's an absolute pleasure being on here, guys. And I was told if I didn't come on, it would be the dumbest thing I ever did. It's like you guys are the mafia of the clean and sober community here
in Philly. That's right.
And I had to be here.
Right.
We would have sent somebody for you.
That's right.
No doubt about it.
And it wouldn't have been a limousine, okay?
That's right. It's great to be here, guys.
It wouldn't have been a limousine.
So excited to have you.
Yeah. When you posted that, the response last night was incredible.
People are hitting it left and right.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. So, Christopher Bowie Turian, born in 19... Well, I'm not going to tell where you're born.
I'm getting old, Gary. I'm getting really old quick.
God, I can't even stand that. I graduated high school that year. Anyway, affectionately known as Bundy, and you got your nickname from Al Bundy from...
Yes.
What's the children's... What's it?
Married with Children.
Great show.
Why
by
do
the
they
way.
Call you? But the character in that show was like, he didn't give a damn, and he was just like
fun loving, easy going guy, shoe salesman, former football, high school football star. You know what? What I tell people without giving them a big description of it is that I'm glad it is Al Bundy and not Ted. That the nickname was given after.
That's a great point.
It's Al, not Ted, and that's all you have to know.
That's a very, very good point. All right, so let's get to your playing, and then we'll get to the. I'm not saying it's not the important stuff, but your life now, you're helping a lot of people. So you grew up in Ottawa.
I did, yeah. Born and raised in Canada. That's where, first 15 years of my life, but people don't realize that I've been in the United States since I was 15. I went to Northwood School in Lake Placid, which was relatively close to my family in Canada. It was only about 2 hours and 20-minute ride. They had a great hockey program. And I went there. I had enough. My dad believed in me enough to give me an opportunity to go to one of the best high schools in the U.S. for hockey. Right. And that's where it was. But my early roots were, pretty simple. Simple Canadian roots, normal kid. I had one younger sister
who passed.
Who did? Yeah, obviously later on in my life, but became instrumental in where my addiction was at the time, and how I was able to come out the other side of it. But that was an instrumental part of she was my whole life, and she was my best friend ultimately. Never judged me for anything in my life. She always wanted me to get better. I think she recognized for a little bit of time that I had an issue with alcohol. But in terms of my childhood, guys, I was raised in a very, very normal, modest home, very much a blue-collar family, small home, went to school, played hockey, had great mom and dad, aunts, uncles, grandparents.
Was your hockey, the environment you were in Canada, was that like our football? I mean, was everybody playing hockey in Canada then?
It was because, a lot of it, I always say, like, why was there more? Well, first of all, the climate dictated it, and I grew up in Ottawa, and people that may or may not know, we have the largest skating rink in the world. It's a river that runs through the city. It's
called
the
Rideau. That's awesome.
Yeah, the Rideau Canal. It was 4 miles long, 6 kilometers, and I get dropped off at one end and picked up at the other about an hour later. Just take my time getting down, but that was 5 minutes from my house, so recreate that.
How long was that river frozen for?
From about when I was a kid, anytime from late November, middle to late November through the winter lude, which was probably close to the end of February.
Was that your favorite hockey ever? It's one of mine, is playing on the ponds.
Yeah. I mean, those are great moments, right? Like, we had a lot of great times. Oh. And that's, people love pond hockey, but, playing on those rinks and stuff. That's where I learned really the game, and I had a true love of the sport of hockey, even as a kid. I lost it, believe it or not, my early, after I was 10, 11, 12, I started getting cut from teams. And as a matter of fact, at 14, I actually quit hockey for a year.
Really?
To ski. Yeah, I skied at my local high school in Ottawa before I went to Northwood. But I did not play hockey for an entire year. And so that's why I see the parents now getting all crazy about stuff with their kids and stuff at 12 and 13. Yeah. I'm like, you guys need to chill. I made it, and I didn't play for an entire year. Yeah.
It almost becomes the parents' deal, not even the kids.
You should see it now, right? I mean, I'm able to forecast my kids easier, especially my son, because I've gone through it myself. He's the same as I was, a late bloomer, but I'm able to see that. But you try to tell another parent that, forget about it. Because, and yes, a lot of people, I think, are living a lot of their dreams through what their kids are doing. And that's a shame in a lot of ways. You want your kid to be happy, to play the sport that he or she wants to play. and make the decisions, the right decisions for themselves.
You know, I find it sad when you see a parent run on the field, start screaming at the coach or screaming at their own kid. I mean, there's enough pressure out there on any kind of athletic field for a kid to that's a tough thing. I mean, especially at a certain age, to pull that off.
It is. It's very difficult.
So the first time you actually played, you were in the Canadian national team in 92 to 93. Let me just see if I got that right. Then you went to the Hershey Bears. Where is that?
The Hershey Bears?
In Hershey, Pennsylvania?
Yeah, but it's 80 miles from here right now.
Okay.
I loved it there. But yeah, I played on the Olympic team in 94 for Canada. So that year we traveled. It was 93, 94. I played a little stint. I was still in college in 92, 93 at Providence. I went from Northwood to Providence College, played in the Hockey East for 3 years. Had a successful college campaign. And then my last year, which would have been my fourth, I instead of going maybe to the Flyers or to Hershey in the minors that year, I chose to go to the Olympic team. It was a great, I mean, I got to see a lot of the world from a travel standpoint. And then I played in the Olympics in 94. We won a silver medal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is pretty nice memory to have of that experience. And then I came to Hershey for a couple games after. There was a work stoppage in the 94-95 season. I went down to Hershey for about 30 games or so, 35 games maybe.
It looks like 34
games, okay. And then the lockout ended in January, and I got called right back up to the Flyers. I technically made the Flyers my first training camp, but because of the work stoppage, I went down, which was a good thing for me because I got some American, some professional games under my belt.
Now, what? You're 6'5", right?
Yeah.
So, are you one of the larger guys on the hockey team?
I would have been one of the bigger guys, yeah. I'd say 6'5 was pretty much, at the time, like if you're a really big guy, like Eric Lindros was 6'5. Keith Primo was a 6'5 guy.
What about in college?
I was probably still 6'5 in college, 6'4 my last year. I maybe grew another inch as I went in. But yeah, 6'5 is a big guy. And I think the thing that was good with, the bigger guys that played here, we were all good skaters. And that was obviously, it's nice to be big, but if you can skate as be a good, quick skater and a big man, You got a lot of good things going on.
Were there any disadvantages for you being your height on a hockey rink?
Not really. Not as a defenseman. No, the only thing that was always good is I always said I played defense. So nobody ever expected me to score a goal. It's a brutal thing having to score a goal, especially if they're not going in for you.
It is nice. It takes the pressure off of you. It really does.
As a defense.
Well, because
you don't have to sell anything. You just have to make sure the other team doesn't.
You don't go over a slump. And when you're a right winger and you're going a slump, there's nothing worse.
He gets it. He does. I've seen a lot of guys stress out over not scoring goals in their career. And you know what? I'd go home after the game and got my job done. And I didn't have to worry about goals. It was like, and they were all, every goal I scored, 29 of them. I do remember that regular season. They were all huge, guys. Because you only get 29, you celebrate them, celebrate every one of those.
Why were you referred to as the enforcer?
I was not. I was never considered that guy. We had plenty of those to go around. But, yeah, I mean, there's certain guys. The enforcer role, now is in the game today. I mean, it really doesn't exist. You have some guys that are able to do it. But back when I played, there was 3-4 guys on each team that were, they were very, very good at what they did. I mean, they were like professional fighters on skates.
Berube,
Dave Brown. I mean, I've seen these guys, come in locker rooms, and you're like, thank God these guys are on my team.
Were you, even at your side, were you afraid of some of these people?
I won't say afraid. You just, like, any guy with, so here's the deal with, like, fighting in hockey and the tough guy part of it.
Yeah.
There's usually only about 2 or 3 guys in the team that would be like, all right, this is great. The other 17 or 18 really don't want to get involved in it. It's like going to war, right? You're hiding behind a rock and bullets are flying. You can say what you want. Then, all right, this is great. But it's really not. I mean, nobody really wants to get punched in the face 5 or 6 times. I have a fight that's on YouTube. It's against Jeff Odgers. This guy was a farm boy from Manitoba. And I got caught one night. Somebody else fought somebody. And he came right after me. And I couldn't get, there's no getting out of it. And I watched the video to this day. And I'm like, I remember my face. It looked like a road map the next day. I mean, it was black and blue. And we were literally punching each other a tit for tat right in the face for 20 seconds.
Man, I wouldn't like that.
And then he fall down. The guy's like, great job, kid. I'm like, great job. Oh, my God. My my face.
Are these all your teeth?
Yeah, I've had chipped teeth. I've actually had my teeth, yeah. And there's a reason for that. If you ask a lot of tall guys don't lose their teeth. Because that means your stick's getting way up there. But I've seen guys that are 5'11", 6 feet, and they get their teeth knocked out all the time.
That's crazy. All right, listen, we got to go.
So
for,
cool.
We got to take our first break.
Yep.
You're listening to Clean and Sober Radio. Give us a call if you want to talk to Chris at 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. And we'll be right back.
A cancer diagnosis knocks the wind out of you. The experts at Jefferson Health's Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center can help. We tailor a care plan to fit your specific cancer, with access to leading-edge treatments like immunotherapy and advanced clinical trials, all from the location that works best for you. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW, the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center, until every cancer is cured. Starting with yours.
Untreated addiction can be devastating, undermining a person's sense of self-worth and disallowing feelings of hope for the future. But it doesn't have to be that way. If you or someone you care about has been struggling, please know this. You are not alone, and help is available. Huntington Creek Recovery Center provides treatment for adolescents and adults who struggle with substance abuse and other co-occurring disorders. They also offer specialized services for those who have a history of trauma, such as yoga, art therapy, and EMDR. Located in the Pocono Mountains near Jim Thorpe, Huntington Creek offers a serene and safe environment in which to heal. Working in close collaboration with their team of compassionate professionals, you or your loved one can forge a bright new future free from substance abuse and other self-defeating behaviors. Addiction doesn't have to be the end. Discover the path to successful recovery at Huntington Creek Recovery Center. To learn more, call 844-948-2320 today. Online, huntingtoncreekrecovery.com.
Hi, this is Governor Tom Wolf. Thousands of families across Pennsylvania have been affected by the opioid epidemic. Together, we can fight this disease. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, help is available. Visit pa.gov/opioids for resources and information on substance abuse. For treatment options, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Brought to you by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Tom Wolf, Governor. Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, this is Darryl Strawberry, and you're listening to Clean and Sober Radio.
Born in Big Beaver by the borderline. He started playing hockey by the time he was nine. His dad took the hose and froze the backyard. Little Buddy dreamed he was Rocket Richard. He grew up big and he grew up tough. He saw himself scoring for the Wings or Canucks, but he wasn't that good with a puck. Buddy's real talent was beating people up. His heart wasn't in it, but the crowd ate it up. Through peewees and juniors and midgets and mites, he must have racked up more than 300.
That was great.
A friend of mine I went to high school with, asked, he said, you should check out this song if you're having Chris on your show. I never heard it. It's pretty
That's
funny.
Great.
Did you ever hear it before?
No, but it's awesome. I mean, any hockey song you hear, like, with, you know, that kind of lyrics and the music to it, it's perfect. It's like the good old hockey game, right? Remember, I used to love singing that song?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We got some emails. Let me run through one or two of them right now. Len N. from Philadelphia. Mr. Terrian, I watched you play for years in Philly and Dallas. You were awesome and a real badass. Hope you're well and happy now.
Yeah, it's great to hear stuff like that. I was not a badass. I was just a solid player. But no, it's nice to hear that, you know, and someone else, you know, I was only in Dallas for a short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's one thing when I separate, I go back. I mean, I think for the most part, I played hard almost every night. I tried to do the right things.
I'm sure you did.
Did you miss Philly when you were in Dallas?
I was only there for 11 games and came back to Philly. Philly's always been the love of my life city-wise. I mean, even still for sports now. I mean, I'm an Eagles season ticket holder. I love going to games. I just love the people and the fan base of Philadelphia. They're real. They understand sports.
Oh, yeah.
And, that's addictive even to someone like me. You know, I see that, and that carries weight to me. So.
We have a caller on the line. I believe it's Monica. Hey, Monica.
Hi,
Monica.
From Conshohocken.
How are you?
I'm good. Your number one fan. How are you guys today?
Good. How are
you? Doing well.
I'm good. My husband said if I didn't call, he was going to spike my drink.
Oh, gosh.
He better not.
I know. He's just teasing.
Well, so Chris is here if you want to talk to Chris for a minute.
To come out publicly and do this to make addiction a little bit more normal. Yeah. I don't know if normal is the word I want to use, but, you know, it's such a accepted. That's the word I want to use. And that's amazing. And I think that's an amazing thing that you're doing, because it's so, sometimes everybody wants to hide it, but that you're doing that is good. And I thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Monica. Yeah. I mean, part of the thing that, you know, I talk about when people come in, anybody that's, whether it's addiction, mental health, alcoholism, one of the things I do tell them is that there's a stigma that's been attached to this for far too long, and we need to get rid of it. So to me, you know, coming out with the story when it did come out in the Inquirer, Sam Carcitti did an unbelievable job with it, better than I ever thought. I mean, we talked for a while, but he really laid a foundation out to tell the story of, you know, who I was and why I did what I did. But for me to have had any validity to it, a couple things had to happen. One, I believe I had to have 10 years of sobriety. Yeah, doing it at 2 years, I think you try to become more of a hero when you really haven't built enough of a foundation for yourself. And the other thing, when I look at being able to tell that story, I had to come out and I had to be able to be, you know, whole with the things and the decisions I made and let people know, like, it's okay. I understood that, you know, I was an athlete in this town. I'm not the first recovered alcoholic athlete in this town. There's plenty of them. But for me to do what I'm doing, I had to come full circle and really share my story. And in the ending is, to me, one about hope. You know, I mean, I look back at this and I did it for myself, but I also did it for my kids, because they deserve far better than having a drunk father coming home at night. I didn't want that. And I realized pretty quickly that I had an issue. And now I look at my kids 10, you know, 12 years later, and I have a great relationship with my kids. You know, they're good kids. It's not perfect. I mean, we still have regular, normal, everyday issues, whether it's college, coming home, that. But it doesn't involve any more drinks. And that's the biggest change for me.
Monica, thanks for the call. Monica. We really appreciate it.
You give me hope. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Monica.
Thanks, honey.
Chris, you know, somebody on our message board asked, is there a stigma in pro sports when it comes to addiction?
There is, you know, I mean, and there was, like, I remember guys that I'd heard when I was even younger, when I'd look at a player on the ice and I'd heard the guy stop drinking. And there I was, like, a 23-year-old calling him a drunk, you know, on the ice, you know, you're drunk, have another, you talk about, you know, things coming back around at you, you know, to me, is there a stigma about it? I don't know anymore. I know that the problem with hockey was that guys would go out of their way to try to support that teammate, right, rather than maybe look the other, you know, to do something differently to try to get that person help. So even if I saw somebody at practice one day that I knew was hungover or something, I would try to pick up for that guy. So the stigma of it's different. Yeah, I mean, I think there was a time where it was perceived, you know, as you became vilified for it, or you became a villain in the eyes of other people. I want people to know that's not the case. It doesn't have to be the case. You can become a normal, productive member of society, like you once were before you got involved with your addiction, and I want people to know that it's no different to me than breaking your arm. You got to go get a cast on it. You got to get it fixed. You have to make sure you do the work that afterwards to keep treating that arm. But that's what it's like to me, and that's why I need people to know. Nobody wants to plan their day out going to look for a drug on the street or buying alcohol so you can get through the rest of your day. That's insanity.
You know, we always say on the show, there's no drive-thrus, there's no delivery service for recovery, but it is definitely out there.
Oh, yeah.
And let me just, I want to mention our three largest underwriters, which are Recovery Centers of America, Jefferson University and Jefferson Hospital, and Acadia Healthcare. And, you know, just as you said, Chris, and Mark, of course, you'll agree with me, you better, this is not a dead end.
No.
Addiction is not a dead end. You can get better.
Yes, you can. And you know, you mentioned RCA. We went out and met RCA about a month ago. We got a full tour of their facilities. I mean, just because I heard it, I know it's up the road in Devon. I mean, they were amazing people. We were thrilled to get out. But that is the thing. And every time I walk into a rehab facility, whether, you know, we're an IOP at Limitless, you know, so we do a lot of aftercare stuff. But in terms, we get people calling all the time that are in their active state. We need to find a proper detox for them, get them to extended care. But you know what? When I walk into a detox and I see, and the one last I was in was in Devon at the RCA, you know, I see people, but I also see that little twinkle of hope in their eyes. And when I talk to people, I want them to understand that, yes, it's painful where you're at the present, but I promise you, based on my own experiences, that there is a happy side. There is another end to this. And you can do it if you want it. You don't have to white knuckle it. I always say sometimes it's better just to let go. You know, just let go of whatever you're dealing with, whatever is going on in your heart, your mind. Let it go. Because sometimes when you push too hard to get sober, it just becomes too hard. Yeah. And so I do. I love those places, though, and I always see a twinkle in a kid's eye, especially the younger people. They're the ones that I really want, you know, to have a chance. That 20-year-old, that kid that's 21-year-old. My partner at Limitless was a 20, you know, stopped at 22 years old, Dominic Chavone. He was a heroin addict, you know. He'd go into Camden. He was from a well-to-do family. Yeah, I mean, good family in Haddon Heights. Mm-hmm. And he'll tell you a story now. I mean, he's got eight, 9 years sober now. From now, he quit at 22. There's a lot of people, unfortunately, in the drug epidemic that don't quite get that chance. And unfortunately, most of them, and a lot of them, the cases end in the wrong way. So, that's where I hang my hope on, is the fact that I think anybody can beat at least the alcoholism, but I also know drug's a drug. I want them to know that there is a happy ending to this if you want to have that happy ending.
Totally agree. A couple more. Let's get some people. And there's a lot of people. Judge Andrea Duffy. Is she our favorite judge?
She is our favorite judge.
I'm telling you something, Mark.
We love judges.
Mark, we do.
And Chris, we think. No, better not say it.
We better not.
No. She loves us, and we always kid with Andrea about whatever. In the old days, if we were in front of her,
yep.
Whatever we did would be cool.
We wished. We wished that she was our judge.
Yeah, yes. We certainly wish. Hey, Frank Griffin. Hey, buddy, Mark Smith. Monty Man,
Take 12 Recovery Radio on the West Coast. You can listen to the podcast.
Absolutely. Robert Brody, Laurie Han Maslin. Hi, Gary, from a beautiful day at Broadkill Beach, Delaware. Keith nice. Hornig. I got Mark Smith again, Monty Man.
My good buddy.
Who do you got?
That I went to grade school with, and we play on the same men's league team. We didn't make the Flyers, you know, but we want Chris to play with us. But his name is Joe LaSorsa.
Okay. Joe LaSorsa, okay.
Okay, that
Joe
sounds
LaSorsa.
Good. Mimi Dorshu from Recovery Centers of America, enjoying the show today, gentlemen. We always enjoy you. Suzanne Duncan, Dan Schmalin. Good, clean, and sober radio day. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you,
Kim Varney Shepherd. We'll get back to this. Gina Kay from Dallas, Texas. Chris, which city did you enjoy playing in the most, Philly or Dallas? Be careful.
Well, I'm going to say this really quickly. Philly was like my home, so I love playing here. And there's no recreating the Philly fans. Although when I was in Dallas, I did not get cheated out of any good nights out. That's for sure. I can say that. That was in my kind of like the beginning for me. You know, I thought that things really dipped downhill after the Dallas trip. But great city, Dallas. I loved it. And they have great fans there, too. Everything's bigger in Texas.
Everything's bigger. Who's Bernie? Is that Parent or Perron?
Bernie Perron.
Chris, you weren't that good. No, I'm only kidding.
I can't really say that back to Bernie.
He's a good guy. We've had him on here several times.
You're one of the best.
Yeah.
I've absolutely. Got a question, if you don't mind, Gary.
Yeah, go, man.
What was it like? Your best season that I read about was 96-97. You know, you had a plus minus 30 or something that year. What was it like getting on the ice for the Stanley Cup Finals?
I mean, it was, that's what every kid dreams about, you know, to get to the Stanley Cup Finals, to be on a team that gets there. I mean, that was a great experience. And the first three rounds, the ride there was awesome. I mean, there was a lot of great things happen. I really thought that might have been the evolution of Lindros. I was hoping that was kind of the real coming out party. It didn't happen. Detroit was a better team. You know, I'm not going to, I tell people that all the time. They ended up going on to win like four cups with that core. But it was pretty cool. It was a great experience.
Do you get those knots in your stomach when you're coming out in front of a full spectrum? Or I think it was a spectrum. It was a spectrum back then. But do you get, as a player, do you get knots in your stomach? Do you get nervous?
I played 2 years at the Spectrum, and I'll tell you what. I mean, it was a different experience in the Wells Fargo Center. Now I think it was Core States when it first opened, Core State Center. But there was nothing quite like the Philadelphia Spectrum in terms of the energy, the crowd in that place was insane. People, there were teams that did get scared truly coming into the Philadelphia Spectrum. I think now it's different. I mean, I don't think there's a building now in sports that can scare anybody anymore. I just don't. I don't think it's all. It's part of the fabric of sport in general anymore.
Interesting. Let's do this. We have one caller. Let's take Cindy, and then we'll take a break. Cindy, you on the line?
Yay! Yes, I am.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I just wanted to say hello to both of you, and I can't tell you how excited I am that you're on the show. And Chris and Gary, you're awesome. And
Mark.
And Mark, of course. Yes, I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
right.
So sorry.
That's okay.
Thanks, Gary.
All of you. And I'm with you. I love your show. Chris, I adore you. And just thanks for letting me, you know, say that on your show.
Well, thank you for that, Cindy. Very sweet of you. And as I said before, I'm very grateful to you that you hooked us all up.
Yes, Cindy's been great.
Yeah.
Cares very deeply about the sobriety community in Philadelphia. It's great to have people like Cindy out there, and I'm glad she called in today, and she's recognized for that, Gary.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks, Cindy. We have to take a break.
Yep,
a cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF now. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
An addiction to alcohol or other drugs can be a devastating and destructive cycle, but professional help is available and successful long-term recovery is possible. Pocono Mountain Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's leading drug addiction treatment center. They provide personalized care for adults 18 and older who are struggling with substance use concerns. Medication-assisted treatment is also available for individuals who are battling opioid addiction. Don't wait another day for your new beginning. Call Pocono Mountain Recovery Center today at 877-596-0223. Online, PoconoMountainRecoveryCenter.com.
Can I go to the sleepover?
Lucy, I want you to promise me something. If there's any drinking, I want you to say, no thanks, not my thing.
Mom!
I promise you, your real friends won't care. Deal?
I promise, Mom.
They really do hear you.
Did you pack your toothbrush?
For tips on how to start the talk, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. A public service message from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration.
This is Andrew Lou Gotham. I am clean and sober. You should be clean and sober. And listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
Hi, this is Butch Patrick. That's right, TV's Eddie Munster. And everything is better with Clean and Sober Radio.
Let's begin now. 60. I woke up this morning and I said, you know, instead of waiting for a good day to happen, you know, waiting around through ups and downs, you know, I just said, look.
I do. That's one of the. It's a happy song. It makes you feel good.
And you can't say I only play stuff from the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, 95% of your stuff is from the
60s. I'm starting to move.
You're starting to move.
I'm
you know.
To move it, you know what I mean? I'm moving a groove.
He's almost in the 80s.
He's almost
no,
in the 80s.
Like,
I know. One of these days he's going to be breakdancing in
right.
here, you know?
That's right.
Breakdancing. When's the first time you got drunk?
That's a great question. You know what? The first drink I had, I do remember, I was 12 years old. I was at a marina outside of Ottawa. And I remember people, it was a big festival, and it was a skating thing. And I was over at a bar separated from the room, and I said, I just want to try this. You realize, and I look back, and go, how did I even know a 12 to order it? And I remember I ordered two rum and cokes, and the bartender made them like I was 55 years old and been sitting there for the last 20 years. It was unbelievable. That and you know what's funny? From that point on until about... maybe like 16 years old.
Yeah,
I probably never drank ever again between then. And even like social, like, you know, I tell a story when I went away to prep school, you know, my dad was spending 10 grand a year to send me there. We didn't have 10 grand. Like, it was falling off a tree. Yeah. We were very modest, like, you know, financial family. And my thing was to not get thrown out for drinking or doing drugs. Yeah. And I was determined that, you know, if stay focused on my hockey. Even when I went to Providence, you know, I went to Providence when more your keen drinking years, you know, you're in college. I will say I never got cheated. Let's put it that way. Like, the nights that I went out hard. You know, work hard, play hard. And that's, I live by that mantra pretty much through my Flyers years. You know, I would say the first 9 or 10 years of my Flyers career, people would say, oh, maybe he drank too much that one night. But it was never really at a point until I got to my last year where I couldn't even function. Like, it was bad.
Chris, do you think that management, maybe in the 60s and the 70s and 80s, they overlooked a lot of stuff. But now, is management more focused on they don't want that nonsense?
I think drinking in hockey, and we were talking about it earlier, yeah, too, about just the part of it being part of the culture, right?
Yeah.
Of, you know, and it's funny because I was raised with the sentiment that drugs are bad. You know, I listened to Nancy and Ronald Reagan in the days, you know, the war on drugs. Yeah. Unfortunately for the war on drugs, drugs won a long time ago, and it's still winning today. But, you know, I was a very, you know, when I look back at it, the league in general, like, I think it's changing now. There's more, I think they frown more upon the drinking. They try to get guys out of town now. But, I've also been around long enough to know that if they're not going to drink, they're going to do something else.
Yeah.
And that's the unfortunate part, you know, and I think that cocaine's been kind of made its comeback in pro sports. It leaves your system quicker. There's been so many rumors about it for so long, but those were things I never did. It was literally go play, go drink, you know, have a few beers, always be a team guy. If a team goes for beers, you go for beers with your team. But, you know, again, things are shifting around a little bit, you know, and I'm sure there's guys that were smoking pot when I played. That might have been a better option for me. But I look back at it, you know, instead of drinking as much as I did. But that's always been my thing. You know, I think when you look at guys that are thrust into the world of sports in general, they're always looking for that same level playing field, even when you're not playing the sport. And I think that's where you get guys with gambling, addiction, drugs, booze, whatever it is.
Yeah. What was the defining moment in your life that you decided to check into the Karen Foundation?
Yeah, it was the end of the 2005-2006 year, and I had a concussion in January. To that point, I was playing as an alcoholic. It was sad, pretty sad excuse. Sad excuse for a human being, really sad excuse for an NHL player to have come to that point. But again, you know, I look back at it now, that's what addiction does to you. You know, that's what calling out your name on it. And you realizing, hey, I better get this in me or I could be in trouble. Like, you know, like it's almost like you don't even know what kind of trouble you're going to be in, but you have to get it in you to normalize yourself. So 2006, you know, as I say, some people say 2020 was their worst year. Well, 2006 was the worst year I'll ever have. And I don't know if I get worse. I don't want to tap wood. Maybe it does, but I hope it doesn't.
Yeah.
My sister passed away in June from a cardiac event. We had no idea anything was wrong with her. I was at the height of my alcoholism. I eulogized her drunk. No one knew. I was, because every time I drank, I was drinking myself sober. Yeah. And I'd actually contacted the league before my sister Sarah Beth had passed away and said, I need help. When I called the doctor back from the league, he knew the 2 weeks that I was about to go through. And I remember it's funny, he said, he goes, don't stop drinking. Whatever you do, don't try to be a hero. Don't go home and try to be a hero.
Yeah.
Because it could be really bad, you know, in terms of your DTs and where the level of alcoholism where you're at. So I did, but I got through it and it was as bad as 2 weeks as like you could have imagined. And, 10 days after that, I checked in the Karen.
Were you married at that point?
I was.
How did your wife deal with all this?
I would say with a great deal of frustration and more care for the kids.
Kids were young.
They were younger. Yeah. I mean, she held things together.
Yeah.
For that. And, for that, I'll forever be grateful. I mean, she really did, an amazing job holding the family together, you know, while I got myself fixed up, if you will, if that's even the word for it.
Well, yeah, that's as good as any.
Yeah.
So, okay, how did your life evolve into getting involved with Limitless recovery centers in Kensington, in Fishtown, Pennsylvania. Fishtown. And I just want to mention for our listeners and viewers who are out of this area, Fishtown is a part of Philadelphia County. It's north of the northern section of Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and it's a real an upcoming area for sure. And that's where your center is now, and it seems like you would like to expand that also.
Yeah, we're going to have to because we're going to have a census problem soon enough, which is a good thing and a bad thing. But when we started, you know, I came in there, and so I bought this was previously founded by a couple guys. We bought one of the partners out. We retained the other one, Dom, who I mentioned.
Yeah.
He's got a great history in the business. I worked at Enlightened Solutions, which is a place down the shore for about 8 months.
Right before you get into Atlantic City.
Yes. And I was kind of moonlighting down there. I was willing to do the stuff I've done with Limitless, but they just never really had me take it to that level. So I'm like, well, if they're not going to make me share the story, I'm going to do it on my own for my own company. And that's exactly what I did. So I went and looked actually before the pandemic started, January of 2020. I actually went into Limitless in Fishtown, and the guy was not interested. The one partner was not interested in selling. Went back in the fall this year. Things had changed a little bit. So we were able to secure the business at the end of December, and we walked in on January 2nd, and it... And when I tell you, guys, the amount of the calls we've gotten, whether it be through social media, Facebook reaching out to me, we have a chat box, phone option thing. Every call, I believe every call, we try to get to every single person. And if you can't come to us, we're going to, you know, I've made it, it's one of the biggest priorities we have is to make sure that person, whether the insurance works with us or not, we scholarship people in, we'll find other places for them. We will leave no one behind. And that's really, really important to me. When I tell Dom, if it's me who gets a call or him who gets a call or whoever, we need to make sure that person is somewhere that they're not left behind just because their qualifications don't dictate that necessarily. So you guys know how it goes. But that's an area, as you said, it is between Fishtown's almost like separates Philadelphia from Kensington in a lot of ways. I don't necessarily think we went there just because of the addiction in that area. There is addiction in that area, as there is everywhere. But I felt for me, Philadelphia, it had to be the place where I had the first IOP, the first recovery center. For me, because of my relationship with the city, with the people, the fact that I played at the Wells Fargo Center over the bridge, that was very, very meaningful and important to me, and something that I had to make sure that we did was find one in Philadelphia. It was hard. But we did, and it's been so far, four and a half months. I can probably say it's been, to me, a better 4.5 month start than I did have in the NHL, and that's because I'm able to the outreach and the amount of people I'm able to touch.
I was going to ask you, is this more satisfying and fulfilling to you than when you were playing hockey?
Well, I hope in 15 years, you know, that people will look and say this would be my legacy more so than hockey. I mean, hockey was a great journey for me. I have no regrets. I loved every second of it. I loved every game I played in the National Hockey League and the relationships that I forged, the people I met, the people I've talked to. And I think that's always been, excuse me, through one of my characteristics as a person. I love talking to people. I don't mind talking to anybody. And that's carried through, I think, through what I'm doing now. You know, I'll get a call from somebody sometimes and Mount Airy, it's just a lady, you know, I'll call her back. She's my son's struggling. I have no problem. Like, I want to be able to, you know, for one thing with me is, you know, I always looked at myself as someone who is so sick that I can't forget what those withdrawals were like when I couldn't get through the other side of that. So I'm very sensitive to that kind of stuff. And I understand the pain physically, mentally, emotionally that people go through with addiction. But yeah, do I think that I want this to become my legacy? You know, I don't think you could do it in 4.5 months. But, you know, when I say sobriety in the city, you know, in terms of somebody who's had, who's been an addict, you know, an alcoholic in Philadelphia, it was the most important part for me was to be able to have that kind of outreach to this community in particular. And again, the reception we've had, the hardest part is to say, I need help. I want help. And they've done that. That's the hardest part. I wish I could go back. If I could turn a clock back in time, I would go back to Christmas of 2005 and walk back in the Bob Clark's office and say, you know what? I need help. I'm suffering here. But I was too scared. You know, I was too scared. At 34 years old, I was too scared to go in. And then because everybody finds out after, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, do you want to deal with that? No, I'm more prepared to deal with that now. I grew up a lot since that point. And, you know, I mean, I'm probably old enough now, guys, but you can't really hurt my feelings anymore. So you know, but I'm in the right place, and I do. And I, when you say that, I do want this to be the, my lasting legacy, and I want people to think, when they think of sobriety in the city, I want them to think my name, you know, and be able to out, give us outreach and call us and let them know they need help.
So Limitless, how many people can you service at one
I think it's
time?
Like 10 per clinician. We're approaching like 20. But we, like the facility guys, I'm telling you, like our conference room, it's great, but we need more space. We need to be able to hold 30, 40, 50 people at different times. So whether that's expanding to different locations, getting a bigger facility in Fishtown, which we're looking at, we have a couple eyes on a couple places. It's just a matter of us being able to get as many of the masses as they can. And them feeling comfortable enough, the people that we have now love the program we have. They love our clinicians and counselors. It would be great.
Do you have AA meetings in there, NA meetings?
There's a the Fishtown men's meeting is in Fishtown. We don't, but we send some of our people from Limitless. We have a sober living. They'll actually go to that meeting.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, we have to take our last break.
Sure.
And don't go away. We'll be back.
A cancer diagnosis knocks the wind out of you. The experts at Jefferson Health's Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center can help. We tailor a care plan to fit your specific cancer with access to leading-edge treatments like immunotherapy and advanced clinical trials, all from the location that works best for you. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW, the Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center, until every cancer is cured, starting with yours.
Recovery Centers of America at Devon is proud to offer inpatient, outpatient, and detoxification services for those struggling with drug and alcohol addiction. We're proud to be in network with Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, Magellan, and AmeriHealth, making the world's finest addiction treatment both affordable and accessible. Call 1-800-RECOVERY today to learn more. Recovery Centers of America at Devon admits patients into our secure, world-class addiction treatment campus 24 hours, 7 days a week, and can provide complimentary transportation from your location to our campus within 3 hours.
Hi, this is Governor Tom Wolf. Thousands of families across Pennsylvania have been affected by the opioid epidemic. Together, we can fight this disease. If you or someone you know is struggling with addiction, help is available. Visit pa.gov/opioids for resources and information on substance abuse. For treatment options, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Brought to you by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Tom Wolf, Governor. Paid for with Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
Hi, Grandma. Can Nina come over for dinner?
Sure. I've been meaning to ask you, what would happen if someone offered you a drink?
Grandma?
If anyone ever does, I want you to say, no, I have too much respect for my family and I don't want to get in trouble.
I promise, Grandma.
They really do hear you. For tips on what to say, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. That's underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. This message brought to you by SAMHSA and this station.
Hi, this is Dion, the Wanderer. Listen to Clean and Sober Radio. You might hear something that'll change your life. Yo!
Hey, man, this is Ricky Bird, former member of Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, an inductee to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as of 2015. And I listen to Clean and Sober Radio, and so do my friends here, right?
A lady that I know just came from Colombia. She smiled because I did not understand. Then she held out some marijuana. She said it was the best in all the land. And I said, no, 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 I don't smoke it no more. I'm tired of waking.
Hey, one of our viewers is my ninth grade history teacher.
Wow.
Ray Parzik. And he says, I think it's directed to you and me. Do you remember the Broad Street Bullies? I'm sure he's not directing it to you.
No.
Chris, do you remember the Broad Street Bullies?
I know almost all of them. They're quite a select crew. That crew.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know what? I love that story, though, right? Like, you got to... Again, a bunch of guys, just kind of packaged them all together. You had an owner passionate as hell and Ed Snyder wanting to win for this city. Never, always wanting to win. And then you get a group of guys like that that go out and deliver in the infancy of a new franchise.
Yeah.
It's one of the great hockey stories of all time. It really is.
The name is great, too.
The Broad Street Bullies. And that's exactly what they were.
And everybody being scared. Like, they started a whole new level of physicality in hockey.
They did. They were hated by the league. And I don't really care, and neither did they.
Right, it's interesting. Hey, Caroline Farrell's watching. Joe LaSorsa is watching.
That's my buddy.
Nice.
Is that your buddy?
And I got another buddy on here, who? Kevin Molan. Haven't right. seen him for a long, long time. Went to high school together.
Good. Linda Carroll. It's great how these people come out. I'm not saying the woodwork. David Knoblock is watching. Jan Olaf Atterborn.
I think you got it.
Did I get it?
I think you got it.
All right, hold on. Let me see something. Oh, my God.
Todd Klotz, recovery is awesome. Whoa, awesome work.
Annette Krause. Denise Labrosse. What else you got?
Ed McCash. Chris, have you had the opportunity to help any other players in the NHL?
Good question.
I have. Yeah, quite a few. I had awesome. The first day that story again came out, I had two former teammates, and of course I won't mention any names.
Yeah, of course.
I had two guys actually call me because of their own struggles in tears. That there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I've been there. I've done that. But that's the impact. You know, I've had several players reach out to me.
That's See, awesome.
That's the great work that you can do. We just spoke about it. No problem. Like doing a drop.
Oh, yeah.
That you know, the platform that you have is great to be able to help, especially people that were in the same profession as you.
And that's the part where I think it was Monica earlier that was mentioned about, you know, having the courage to, you have to, I had to tell my story, because then you get an NHL player, a former guy, that you realize is that, wow, that's a big personality, but he was scared to ask for help like anyone else.
Yeah.
So to me, that's the part that they could say, wow, geez, if Chris did it, then why don't I just give Chris a call and see what he did? That's what you need to do. Because it's, and really, you're going to find out at the end of the day, it's not that big a deal if you get yourself right over it, right? Like, if you fix your problem, you continue to find a program that works for you on a daily reprieve, so you get the next day and you can move on, then life turns around, life gets better.
I think people are enamored with famous people, whether they're politicians, sports entertainers, and they don't know that regular people, when yes. it comes down to it. I don't care how big you are, how small you are, regular people with the same problems.
Well, it's like when you know, I was growing up before, I used to hear about the alcoholic doctor or the alcoholic lawyer, and you're like, well, that doesn't happen to people like that. It only happens to, you know, people in the blue collar space.
Right.
It doesn't happen to athletes. Those guys take care of themselves. They're amazing, you know. I got news for you. You
That's
know,
right.
It doesn't pick and choose. It doesn't. It
no
doesn't.
Way.
You know.
Yeah.
It goes after you full bore, and it does not care who you are.
Sarah L. from Tupelo, Mississippi. How much does it cost to get help? My son needs it badly. Well, I can say this: you can get it for nothing if you start going to meetings.
That's true. You don't even have to put a dollar in the basket if you don't have it, right?
Yeah.
And
it's out there, and a lot of places do have scholarship money.
Yes, and
yes.
you right. can also check with the, you know, if you don't have insurance, check with the state what kind of programs they have.
Absolutely, and that is true. At the end of the day, you can come to IOP. Some people need a little extra clinical work, like viral IOP, but that is absolutely true. You can go to an AA meeting. You don't even have to put the dollar in. I always put the dollar in because there's nowhere else on the planet that I can get entertained for an hour for $1 like that. So I make sure I keep it up.
That's a great way to yeah. put it.
That's true.
Very
You're
accurate.
Listen, it's a serious subject, but Mark and I, we have fun doing this show. So
sure.
you have to have fun with all this.
You know, my journey is my journey. And when I look back at the fun times I had, I don't have any regrets over it. I only have regrets about some of the things that happened later on and when it became painful. But those are life experiences. You take the good with the bad, and you're able to put together more good than bad.
Yeah.
And learn from it.
Learn
right?
from it. That's life, you know? I mean, anybody can have an ailment. Anybody can have anything come across their table that doesn't quite work for them in the world or in life. But it's how you handle that and how you get back up off the ground and figure out how to move forward. And that's what I did. I mean, that's what I've kind of done my whole life. It was no different when it came to drinking. I was in a place alone by myself, and I said, there's no one else who's going to do this for me. You need to do it yourself. But I will say this, though, guys, one of the biggest points to me, I never really found a way to stay sober every single day until I got stayed around sober people and got a sponsor.
Yeah.
That's the biggest point. Yeah. Like my sponsor is like my little brother. He's one of the best people I know. And we found a way through, you know, like, and for me, that's like a team thing, right? So when I'm a team, like as a team guy, I never want to let my teammate down. And that's kind of what I've had built in, you know, in my own head saying, you know what, let's all lean on each other. But I could never get serious about being sober until I finally got intertwined and started mingling and realizing that the sober community is me. It's who they were when they were out drinking too, like me. So what could they be like in sobriety? They're just as great.
Yeah. People, places, and things.
Yes.
You know. When should we do the drop? Whenever? You want to do it after? We'll do it after. All right, we have a minute left.
Man, yeah.
Hey, listen, thanks so much for coming on the show. Whatever we can do to help you with your event, your new venture, we'd be glad to.
We'd love to get you down. Like I said, it's limitlessrecoverycenters.com. We're planning for the future, even though right now it's just a center. It's limitlessrecoverycenters.com.
Right.
And we can be found at any social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. I put some stuff out sometimes. But really, our goal is for you, the public, to have enough confidence to inbox me on Facebook if you want, on Messenger. Even so, anything on Twitter, Instagram, or just send a message on the chat box to Limitless. We get right back to you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What are you doing this weekend?
I am going to hang out. I'm still trying to help my wife get better. So, you know, hang out. I'm going to try to fish a little bit at some point, you know, get the fly fishing rod out or something, just to relax. Good. How about you?
I'm going down the shore right after this. What are you doing this weekend, Chris?
My daughter's graduating from Loyola, my oldest daughter.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
Yep.
It's awesome.
That's good stuff.
Yep, great stuff.
I think I hear our music, right?
I think I do, too.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.